Can you remain a Christian if you stay away from church on Sunday mornings? I've written a column in the latest issues, etc. journal titled, Why Do You Go to Church? We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Mark Seyfried writes about his journey from being a Baptist seminary professor to becoming a Lutheran seminary professor. It's the free online Issues, etc. journal, issuesetc.org. It has been 9 years. I think that that's a fair amount of time to assess a government program. It's supposed to be a overhaul, a renovation, and a reformation of the American public school system, the whole educational system. It came with huge promises, not only of the problems that it would solve, but also of the progress that it would make. Have the promises been kept after 9 years of Common Core? Joining us to answer that question, regular guest Joy Pullman. She's managing editor of The Federalist and author of the book The Education Invasion and a recent column titled 9 years into Common Core, Test Scores Are Down, Indoctrination Up. Joy, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
Joy, if you were a classroom teacher and if Common Core was one of your students, what grade would you assign Common Core, and what kind of comments would you send home in the report card?
Well, the only reason I hesitate to give it an F would be that I could conceive of a worse education program. So maybe the F ought to be reserved for something like a communist agitprop. You know, that would be measurably worse. I mean, but if we're not including things that aren't kind of on the table or aren't opportunities for kids, I think it definitely needs to be down there. I mean, I guess it's not the worst thing that one could think of, you know, to happen in public schools, but it's definitely a failing grade. But it already, you know, ought to have received kind of a failing grade even before it got into classrooms, just on grounds of subverting, you know, the way that the American system is supposed to work, because in America, we're supposed to have a representative government where our elected representatives, you know, get to go and debate and discuss publicly and before things happen, you know, whether a certain policy is going to happen. And that did not happen at all with Common Core. It even still to this day, it almost never went through almost any state legislatures where the core power of education resides still. But also in terms of content, you know, even people who received a lot of money from Common Core supporting organizations, when they evaluated the academics of it, there were other states that were clearly better than Common Core that we could have used as models, and helped kids have. We already knew things that were better than Common Core that we could do for American kids, but instead, American kids were given at best something that people who support it think is, you know, relatively mediocre.
What is Common Core?
So Common Core is this thing, I mean, in jargonese, in kind of the education world, it's technically called standards, but I don't like to use that term because it kind of has an embedded positive bias. Because, you know, a standard seems like something, you know, it is clear, it's objective, it's something that we ought to be meeting. Everyone wants to be held to high standards, or they want their kids or their teachers to be. But really what that means, I use the phrase curriculum and testing mandates. So for about the past 30 years now, American public schools have been in the format of what is called standards-based instruction. And what that really means is that central planners have, since the 90s, since the George H.W. Bush and then Bill Clinton years, the federal government has incentivized, given states extra money and kind of carrots and sticks, for centrally planning their curriculum. And so they write these very long jargon-filled documents that are called quote-unquote standards. But basically what they do is tell teachers and classrooms and school districts what they have to teach kids in order to do well technically on the state tests that are also centrally planned. So I call them curriculum, you know, mandates and regulations. And typically, I mean, since it's centrally planned, they're almost never of high quality. It's very rare. There's only one or two states that have ever really had good curriculum standards, and those are anomalies. But because it's centrally planned, and we have, you know, huge disagreements in this country over what kids should be taught, how they should be taught, and why, So to avoid those controversies, the people writing these things typically water them down and make them just so filled with edubabble that they almost mean nothing. So, of course, if they don't really mean much, then it's hard for them to improve student achievement. And indeed, that's basically they haven't done that, that the system of education really doesn't work. And we've seen that for 30 years now.
What were the promises made in association with the imposition of Common Core in schools?
The article that you and I are talking about today, I went back to things, the big, huge promises made by really prominent figures while Common Core was moving into place already. So it was already kind of a done deal at the federal level through signing a bunch of under-the-table contracts. It was never passed into law. It was never publicly voted on. So, but President Obama in 2009, when his administration was rolling this out, as well as his education secretary, Arne Duncan. And so those are folks on the prominent, you know, Democratic side who, you know, went out there and told the American public that they thought Common Core was really going to accelerate student achievement. So they go out there and say, look, American schools really aren't doing that well. And that is absolutely true. You know, we have a, at best, mediocre education system. And then they said, you know, we think that Common Core is going to help with that problem. But it wasn't just prominent Democrats who made those claims. It was prominent Republicans as well. So I quote in the piece Jeb Bush, the Wall Street Journal was in favor of Common Core, although they published some op-eds that were contrary after the controversy got started in the states among grassroots parents groups. But really, the kind of quote-unquote establishment political leaders on both sides of the aisle supported Common Core and told Americans that they thought it would be better for kids. And that actually is a pattern, again, that goes back all the way through standards-based education reform, the style of, you know, education we've had for 30 years. That's been a bipartisan kind of project inflicted upon the nation's schools. It's been supported by both Republicans and Democrats ever since it was dreamt up.
Let's talk about test scores. How have they fared after 9 years of Common Core?
Well, not very well. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, American kids really have, at best, a mediocre record, and that has been true for 50-plus years. Compared to the rest of the world, we have one of the most dynamic, if not the, I mean, it's certainly the leading in terms of gross domestic product, the amount of money that the productivity, the amount of economic value that each American citizen can generate in a year is the most in all the world. So we're really good in our economy, but we're really not good in our education system to kind of, you know, accelerate that. So we were promised that, you know, Common Core was going to do something about that by all of these prominent leaders, including President Obama and Jeb Bush. And that really has not panned out. So what we've seen, Common Core was kind of passed into law. I mean, I can't really say passed into law because it was never law, but it was all the contracts for it were signed in 2009 and 2010, a few in 2011. And so they started to really roll out in schools in 2013 through 15. 2015 was supposed to be when it was finally rolled out in schools. So, I mean, it's been, you know, 9 years since the process started, and it's been 3 or 4 years since Common Core was supposed to have been fully implemented. And ever since then, we have seen no improvement in student test scores on any nationwide measure except for average SAT scores, a very slight amount, like a statistically insignificant amount, 0.7% rise. And that is only probably related to the fact that the SAT college admissions test was actually completely overhauled by the guy who wrote Common Core himself. He became in charge of the SAT testing company. And he, you know, rejiggered all the test scores. And so it's unclear whether the increase in test scores that was, you know, negligible, it relates to actually that students have done better, or whether the test has been kind of more molded to fit Common Core. So it's kind of an artificial inflation. So we don't really know. But given that none of the other indicators of student progress have improved under Common Core, it's pretty safe to say it's probably test inflation. We've actually seen there were a couple of notable student achievement declines on the most reliable nationwide test. It's called the Nation's Report Card, the NAEP, particularly in math, which is one of the things that parents complain the most about Common Core. We have seen students on the ACT, the other major college entrance exam, those have hit, you know, 20-year rock bottom in college preparedness. And that is precisely the opposite of what we were told would happen. You know, Common Core was supposed to get more kids ready for college, and the opposite is happening.
Joy Pullman is our guest. She's managing editor of The Federalist. We're talking about Common Core giving it a report card after 9 years on this Tuesday, November the 6th. When we come back, we'll talk about other problems that Common Core was supposed to solve and apparently has actually made worse, and the fact that it appears to be, in some cases, a Trojan horse for progressivism. What are some of the most misunderstood and confused aspects of Christianity, and how can we respond? Clearly Christian, Following Jesus in This Age of Confusion, is the Issues Etc. book of the month for November. Clearly Christian is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. book of the month, Clearly Christian.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We're giving a report card to Common Core after 9 years of implementation. Joy Pullman is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Joy is managing editor of The Federalist and author of the book The Education Invasion and a recent column titled 9 Years into Common Core, Test Scores Are Down, Indoctrination Up. Thanks to David in San Antonio, Texas and Ronald in Garden City, Kansas for recently registering for the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference later this week, November 9th and 10th in Dallas, Texas. It's not too late for you to register, and it's an opportunity for you to meet and hear Anthony Esselin, Ryan Anderson, Chris Roseborough, Beverly Yonke, John Warwick Montgomery, and Mark Kaltoff. Registration is $120. That includes 3 meals. Child care is free for children ages 1 through 12, thanks to Wittenberg Academy, an online classical Lutheran school. You can register at issuesetc.org or give us a call before Thursday at 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas. Joy, talk about Common Core as, in some cases, a Trojan horse for sometimes just kind of your run-of-the-mill garden variety leftism and sometimes just insanity.
Right. So, and this is one of the things that those of us who opposed Common Core, and I actually started out on, you know, reading about this and reporting on it much more as a reporter, and I became extremely anti-Common Core after having done that and just think, you know, discovering that due diligence wasn't being done on the process. So, you know, back, the critics that I, you know, the few that I could find back when I was trying to figure out what Common Core was in 2011 through 13 were people who were close to the data, who had experience actually improving, you know, curriculum in states and in school districts. And they were saying that, you know, Common Core just really wasn't going to do that based on their experience. So that was kind of the curriculum critique. And then there was the political critique And that's one that I slowly developed over time. You know, I went and researched kind of the history of American education. And what we see over time is that American public schools, the public school system, has been radically centralized. And so what that means is back in the days of the early American public, tax dollars actually, you know, we basically had almost what we call it today a voucher system. Local tax dollars followed kids to Christian parochial, you know, schools very typically run, you know, through churches, and states had state religions. And so schools are basically, you know, largely church run. There was almost no quote unquote secular school. Anyway, so over the passage of time, though, schools gradually became more absorbed into larger and larger political entities until we reach now, you know, the state that we are now, where the federal government has very strong control over what happens in local public schools, even though it doesn't contribute most of the tax dollars to them. And what that does politically is when you kind of create a big power center, you know, when you can create one lever that can reach into all the schools in the country, then you create an impossible to overcome incentive, a reason for special interest groups to get control of that power center. And so, I mean, this isn't something that just happens in education. It's something that happens in every political domain. And that's why, you know, the founding fathers wrote actively about dividing factions, special interests, about so that they would fight against each other and none of them would have control of the centers of power, you know, so that would expand the freedom and the self-government of the people. So we don't have that anymore. We have a very centralized education system that is controlled by central bureaucrats, basically. You know, whoever gets to control the system, you know, can reach into every single public school. So when you create a system like that, and then that not only makes it possible to create Common Core, but what it also does is it radicalizes the centralized system. So because the special interests are going to work and work and work and work and work until they are in complete control of it, and that's what we see happening through Common Core. So what has happened recently, and I write about this in the article we're talking about, is that Common Core money from the federal government went to create these programs in the name of Common Core in a number of states. And one of them was New York. And New York created literal curriculum that's related to Common Core, one of the earliest ones, federally funded. But not just New Yorkers and New York public schools used it. And studies were later shown, you know, that 30-40% of the nation's, you know, teachers and schools were using this curriculum from New York, partly because it was one of the only things available that fit this brand new Common Core that they all of a sudden had to do, and also partly because it had received federal funds. It was kind of given priority of place. Anyway, so we kind of have this shell created, you know, this mechanism for reaching into every public school in the country. And then what happened is after New York blew through $28 million of that federal money to create this Common Core curriculum, they passed off the project to a private organization. And that private organization now goes around teaching teachers how to teach Common Core. And the problem with it, though, is that this is an extremely radical leftist organization. It's not just New York politics, you know, which is farther left than most of the country. So that was, you know, that's one thing. I mean, that's kind of like just saying, you know, come teach Democrat ways of interpreting Common Core. But it's radical people even for New York style politics. So, for example, there was a recent article in a National Review that was, reporting on what happened at these conferences from this organization that controls this very large curriculum apparatus. And the CEO of the organization went in front of teachers and told them, basically, that they had to, they needed to admit that they're all racist simply because of their skin color. She said, this is a paraphrase, but it's very close to a quote from her, that if you are a white person, you are never good because of the color of your skin. I mean, and we are seeing this sort of thing, you know, politically from very radical leftists in general, not just in education, but that's an extremely volatile, and most Americans don't agree with that. Most Americans agree with Dr. Martin Luther King's, you know, wanting to transcend race, to focus on people's character, not, you know, what they look like. So she is using her position of power that was created by the mechanism of Common Core, and on behalf of Common Core to teachers who are required to learn about it because Common Core now affects how they can get their teacher licenses, she's basically propagandizing these teachers who are going back to their classrooms across the country to then pass that sort of propaganda on to their kids. And again, this is what always, this is the tendency of creating you know, a central system, the radicals always come in and control it. And that's one of the many reasons that you shouldn't create a centralized system, but you should disperse power, you know, return it back to the individuals, to the families, to the local communities, so that they basically can't be, you know, co-opted and colonized by people that they don't agree with, using their tax money and inflicting, you know, ideas parents don't agree with on their children.
It's not just the parents. With a minute or two here left to us, I think all of us have met teachers who are deeply frustrated with Common Core, who feel like they are being forced to attend these seminars and to push this stuff in the classroom. I've even heard of several who say, look, I'm getting out of the business. When I started in here, I was doing it the way that I had been taught as a child, too. I wanted that to pass that on to other children, and now it's not worth it anymore. How do we stop Common Core now that it's worked its way into the bloodstream of American education? About a minute.
Well, I agree with you, Todd. I have heard lots of teachers say the same thing, and the statistics show that the turnover rate for teachers is very high compared to other similar professions, and I think that is one reason, their loss of autonomy. And I think, you know, one of the ways to restore teacher autonomy and family autonomy is to eliminate those power centers that I was just complaining about a minute ago. People need their state lawmakers, their federal lawmakers now, since the centralization is federal, to be passing bills that reduce the centralization and the centralized power that controls education. It has never improved American education. It has a track record of failure at anything but wasting money and basically burning it in big brush fires. And what we really need is both a politics of returning the power to the individuals, not even to, you know, centralized school districts, but to individual families through school choice. But we also, you know, we also need a movement of individuals standing up and saying, look, I'm not going to be controlled by this system anymore. I am going to make better choices for my family. And if, you know, if that's going to require getting my finances in order, that might require, you know, moving to a different job, whatever family choices we have to take. As you know, and churches need to get together and communities and families to support each other and raising their kids really well. I mean, I think more people, both at the individual level, the local community level, as well as the political level, need to be doing whatever they can to take back, you know, the power over their kids' education, however they can manage to access that.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist. She's author of the book, The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled 9 Years into Common Core, Test Scores Are Down, Indoctrination is Up. You can read it and purchase The Education Invasion under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Joy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
In hour two of Issues, Etc., Dr. Adam Francisco will join us. We started a series with him recently introducing the Quran. We'll be in Surah 96. According to Muslims, they believe that it's the first revelation that their prophet Muhammad received from Allah. Then Tom Baker will join us to teach a Sunday school lesson on God giving the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapters 19 and 20.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for you and the divine service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.
Can you remain a Christian if you stay away from church on Sunday mornings? I've written a column in the latest Issues, Etc. journal titled, Why Do You Go to Church? We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Mark Seifried writes about his journey from being a Baptist seminary professor to becoming a Lutheran seminary professor. It's the free online Issues, Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.